comparatively normal life, except for frequent lung congestion, and when those symptoms persisted, her parents had her checked for emphysema, negative. Cystic fibrosis, negative. Doctors had no idea what was causing her lung distress. Well, it worsened until she was able to sleep at night only with oxygen, and then she frequently needed the oxygen in the daytime. Twice, the little girl suffered respiratory failure and had to be revived with CPR. During her most recent bout with pneumonia, the little lady, she is 10 now, she was at Vanderbilt Medical Center in Nashville undergoing yet another series of tests. I'm omitting her name in deference to the family's wishes. You know, you and I sometimes wonder why a doctor examines us all over when the only thing that hurts maybe is a big toe. Well, let me tell you about what happened in that examining room that day at Vanderbilt. The doctor is routinely examining her mouth. Her mouth. He noted more than the usual number of cavities. Did she eat a lot of candy, he asked. The little girl said no, she preferred bubblegum. She said her mother and younger brother would buy bubblegum for her in large boxes because she explained it doesn't last long. What did she mean? The doctor wanted to know. That it doesn't last long. The little girl patient said it disappears. Well, had Dr. Dirk Hamp not been alert that day, this story might have a quite different ending, but he pursued the little girl's remark that her bubblegum disappeared. And he discovered that where most of us can chew gum until we are tired of it, in the mouth of this little girl, the gum dissolves, and almost immediately. Well, now the doctors call in specialists in molecular physiology, in biophysics, in pharmacology, and scientists converge from the Wrigley Chewing Gum Company, and they all worked separately and together on analyzing her saliva for the detergent-like lipids which dissolve her gum. And they are now confident that they can find whatever it is that is destroying her teeth and her lungs. All concerned are confident now that the chewing gum clue will lead to appropriate countermeasures within months. Perhaps by the end of this year. For after all, it is a race against time, and the ramifications of this case are ever widening otherwise. You see, the scientists and the researchers have discovered that whatever turns the little girl's saliva into a solvent is genetic. Her younger brother is developing the same disease. And one thing more that the specialists at Vanderbilt confirm with pride. After this patient had confounded the most esteemed specialists for all her young life, the one individual whose gentle bedside manner led to questioning about her teeth and about her disappearing bubble gum was Dick Hamp, a fourth-year medical student. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is going to touch on a whole lot of those different topics, aren't you, Nate? Nate Santos, he's a multifaceted entrepreneur. He's part of the Santos family, who are the owners and purveyors of Ranchos Los Santos, of the home of the famous dancing horses, which I'm sure many of you have seen. I actually got to go see meet some of the horses this weekend, and so he's going to give us a glimpse into the whole dancing horse thing and how the family got into that business. He's also a skilled tradesman. He's got his own plumbing business. So in the second segment, we're going to talk about how young people like him and younger are getting into the trades. And this is a huge trend in the United States. And it's a great way for young people to actually go out and earn a living and not have to get their brains scrambled at some elite Ivy League college. And then, because he's a plumber, he's going to give us some plumbing tips and things that we need to be looking at in the last segment. So, Nate, welcome back to Protecting What Matters. Or welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you, Barry, for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Folks, you can call with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So let's talk about the family business first.
Sure.
Tell us, give us the background on how your family got into the dancing horse thing and how it's just kind of all snowballed for you.
Yeah, well, first off, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
And to get into that, it all started with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, some folks might recognize him from a couple of local community events that we're involved with. The Tamale Festival being an annual event, mm-hmm. right there in Atascadero in front of City Hall. He sings mariachi-style music. His name is Manuel Enrique, and we've named the show. Actually, you know what? It was the city of Atascadero that named the show when they were first started to promote the event.
Mm.
They titled it Manuel Enrique and the Famous Dancing Horses. And when I heard that on the radio, I was like, wow, that's a cool name. We didn't mm-hmm. have a name for the show, really. So we just kind of rolled with it. And my dad's always just, he grew up with the passion for mariachi music and singing mariachi-style music since he was a little boy in Mexico. And coming up to the States, you know, in search of the American dream, he's been able to, you know, realize that and has his own horses and has performed at local community events and rodeos down in Santa Maria, Guadalupe, Nucuyama. And I've always been an animal lover. So growing up around him, once he got involved with the horses, naturally I just shifted towards that and I help him out with that as well.
Yeah. So how, I got to meet three of the horses on Sunday. You know, I have to say, I mean, the amount of work that you guys do, first of all, they're the best looking horses I've seen in a long time. I mean, they're beautiful animals.
Thank you.
Especially, what was the big one, the Jamaican you called
it? Jamaican, man. Jamaican. Spanish, Jamaiquino.
Uh-huh.
And I was just messing around with him because, like you said, they're beautiful horses. There's a lot of upkeep taking care of them. We're constantly braiding their mane and their tail. And, you know, like you mentioned, being a little bit younger, growing up with social media, we're always on the social media sharing mm-hmm. kind of what we got going on with our day and what activities we're having. I was braiding his hair, and he had, like, these long dreads.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing some reggae music, and I was like, these horses aren't just dancing horses to, like, mariachi-style music. They like reggae, too. I was like, this is a Jamaican horse. And mm-hmm. then my dad overheard that, and so he just heard me say it in English, and he started calling him Jamaiquino, which translates to Jamaican man.
That's pretty funny.
Those, yeah.
And you know, I appreciate the fact that you had confidence to tell me to go ahead and jump on his back and and take a ride. But, you know, that is the tallest horse I've ever seen in my life. I mean, how many hands is he?
He's a good size. I'd say he's probably 16'2", 16'1".
Yeah, I mean, because his shoulder was at my head.
Yeah, he's a tall guy.
Yeah, he is a tall guy. So next time.
Yeah, we'll plan on... I'll bring a ladder.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the tradition of Mexican horse dancing. I mean, it goes back a couple of centuries almost, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So, you know, Mexico's history, you know, being indigenous folk conquered by, you know, the Spaniards and all that kind of a thing. The dancing horses is derived from Spain. It's a high school dressage movement. They're actually traditionally and historically war horses. Mm-hmm. The Andalusian horse breed is a war horse. And so what I like to explain to some folks is, imagine back in the days of battle where you're fighting with bows and arrows, spears and swords on horseback, and, you know, two kingdoms meet up, you know, on a mountainside with the valley, and you're about to face off for war, the tension's in the air, and you see it in some of the movies, they're staring at each other. Well, the horses, they would feel that tension, and they would feel nervous and antsy and uneasy, and they would be moving around, shifting around. So what the horsemen started training them to do is to march in place, and that's where the dance movement comes, and that would kind of help burn off some of their steam. And within that training, there's a few different movements. You saw one of them called the Spanish walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the horses punch in the air.
Right.
So we look at that now and like, oh, look how pretty, how cool that is. And I mentioned to you, it was like, all right, now imagine a battle, a gentleman on horseback with a bunch of foot soldiers around him, if that horse is marching forward, lunging his front hooves, that is going to hurt, bust your kneecap.
It's intimidating.
Yeah. So that's where the whole movements is derived from. And then in Mexico, with our culture, we use them for, you know, cattle work, ranch work. And then we are very happy, upbeat culture, mm-hmm. ethnicity, with fiestas and that kind of a stuff. And that's where the music comes in, and having your horse dance and enjoy some tequila shots and some live music playing.
So the horses are they responding to the music that's being played, or are they just responding to the prompts that you're giving them?
So from a more professional standpoint, it's more based off of the prompts.
Okay.
However, when we first started learning about it, like us, you know, we would kind of involve the music during their training. However, we learned over the years, it's better that it's a prompt command from us, the rider, as opposed to them just hearing music and then just start dancing. There mm-hmm. are some guys that do practice that, and we've learned it's better for the prompt to come from us.
So, and how do you get them to, how do you, what's the training process in getting them to lift their feet the way you want them to do it?
So it's a very long process. Oftentimes can take years. A lot has to do with their breed. They already have this natural, elegant gait, mm-hmm. and they're high energy horses. And then it starts off with what's called the 2 pee-off posts, where the horse is tied up and you're just tapping on the different hooves. Mm-hmm. Rewarding the positive behavior for each time that his hoof is tapped and he lifts up. And then just over time, you know, adding a little bit more taps, and the horse starts kind of getting the beat. Some horses, some colts, there's videos right now, like I said, the Asia social media, you'll see him on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Well, there'll be a young colt in his corral on his own just dancing away. It's just, they've been bred for it.
That's interesting. Okay. And so I was interested, it's only the male horses that get taught how to dance.
Yeah.
But why is that?
I think it's a cultural thing. I don't really have a specific answer for
you
on
that.
You're
going to get into trouble
here. One of the articles that you shared with me mm-hmm. that kind of mentioned that, we've had over our years since we've been working with horses here in North County, I'd say close to 20 years, a little over 15 years, and we've had our own horses, we've trained other horses, we've bred our own horses. 20 plus horses that we've had over the years, and we've only had to geld 2 of them. And it's only the only time we ever geld them is when they need what one of my horse vets calls brain surgery.
I see.
To mellow them out. Yeah. And unless, you know, we're real big on their training, them getting used to the environment, to being well behaved. I've trained some of my studs that I've worked with in the past at ranches where there's mares present. Mm-hmm. And they get real like, oh, they want to go next to the girls, you know, just naturally, like any guy sees a pretty right. girl, we're going to react. And they want to react too, and we just kind of correct their behavior and don't let them, and make them focus on what they have going on. And it's a time and place. We've bred our stallions. One woman was really surprised. I used to live in Atascadero, and she wanted to bring one of her quarter horses to one of our studs. I rode him over from our ranch to her ranch, unsaddled him, live covered the mare, pulled him away, saddled him back up, and rode him home. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. And I was like, well, we've trained him to be well-mannered, well-behaved. And some folks have referred to our studs as gentlemen.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So you had the 3 male horses that I saw, and then mm-hmm. and then you have another, your property. You keep, how many mares do you have?
We have right now about 3 mares. There's one that's going to be foaling here coming up in the next couple of months, and then there's... After that one foals, there'll be 4 that will be going into breeding.
Yeah, so you're not only doing the dancing horse thing, you're doing the whole breeding.
Yeah, that's one of the things
probably
that
where the money is.
That's one of the things that I like more. It's a really more of a hobby, really. I really tried making it a business, and I just haven't quite gotten it fully to be profitable and lucrative as I'd mm-hmm. like it to be.
Yeah.
But I like looking at a horse. Looking at the color of it, looking at the conformation, looking at the mare and saying like this stud is going to produce this sort of offspring and, you know, good temperament and that sort of a thing. I enjoy that.
So that's another little project that you made for yourself.
Keeps me out of trouble.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, one of the things I was going to ask you, so in Mexico where they have the dancing horses, was mariachi music always part of that?
Yeah. So growing up, I grew up with my dad watching like Mexican Western movies. A couple of names you might be familiar with. For example, Vicente is a big Mexican charro mariachi artist, famous. You can see his docu-series right now on Netflix. A customer was actually just telling me yesterday. It's called El Rey. I'm going to have to check it out. You see a little bit of his story. Another big one is Antonio Aguilar. And so there are these Mexican singers that sing mariachi-style music, and there are, and there's movies and there's Westerns, and they just break out in song in the middle of the movie, and they all have their horseback riding through the mountains. It just, it's, I would just say it's part of the culture.
Yeah. So, and how did your dad get into that?
So he has a really cool story where since he was a little kid, a little boy, he always tells us he always loved music and loved singing. And when he was young, he went to go see a movie of Vicente Fernandez at the movie theater in his hometown. And there's a scene where Vicente Fernandez is singing, serenading a beautiful gal that he wants to love, conquer her. And he's singing on a white horse, dancing the horse. I don't know the name of the movie, but he's always told a story. And he said that that night he went home and he went to bed, he had a dream. And in his dream, he was riding a white horse, dancing horse, and he was singing and performing.
Huh.
So he's been able to make that dream come true.
That it's very cool. I have to say, he's riding around the ring, holding a microphone,
yeah,
singing while he's riding this enormous horse. And he hasn't really been riding that long. He's learned how to ride within what, the last 20 years or so.
Yes, within the last 20 years, he rode a little bit when he was in Mexico, and it was more like, donkeys for ranch work, around the ranch, bringing firewood to the house, type of thing from the hills. Ranch working horses. A working ranch horse riding is different than a performing dancing horse. So he has learned that.
We have an equine question on the line. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question or comment?
Do you use chemicals like the soaring people that they use on Tennessee Walkers or hit their legs with sticks to make them perform?
No, ma'am. And I appreciate you calling in and asking that question. And we have heard about that. And actually from getting these sort of questions and pushback from some locals in the past, I had never heard of the whole soaring with the Tennessee Walkers. And I did some research, and that's awful what they do to those poor
animals. What is that?
They cut their hooves, ooh, and they'll add like diesel and some other chemicals
of that in one of the articles.
Yeah, it's horrible stuff, man. And some of these poor horses, I've seen some videos, and it's horrific. They'll be laying, and they can't even get up just to get them do this fancy gait. It's a little bit different movements than what we have. It's a beautiful movement, but it's unnatural, and they get them to do it in an unnatural way.
It's a horrible thing. Horrible, horrible.
It is absolutely horrible, and we pride ourselves on the fact that we don't beat our horses. We don't mistreat them. They're well-fed. They're well taken care of. Barry here witnessed them himself. We have faced a little bit of public backlash over the years, and I've given myself the homework to reach out to certain local individuals to come check out our facilities and take a look at what we do. And they've said, hey, if it ever really comes down to that big of an issue, we've got your back because we can see what you do here with your horses, and we can tell that you love your animals and that kind of thing.
Yeah. You anticipated my next question, so thank you for asking that. That's a great, because that is something that was in my research. I saw, that there were some things like what you were just talking about, cutting their legs and stuff. It's awful. So thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
So in the last minute or so we have left in this segment, we have about 3 minutes left. Can you tell a really great story about one of the parades, one of the events that you've done that just stands out in your mind? I mean, I know, you do some riding with some of these events, and you've got the three horses. Mm-hmm. But when we see you guys with like 8 or 10 riders, those are other people that come and join you, right?
Yeah, we have friends from some here and locally here in North County, Paso, Tascadero. And we have a lot of friends down in the South County area, Napomo, Santa Maria, Guadalupe, 5 cities that will come and ride with us. In the parades, it's really just like for fun, for us to have a good time. One of the best experiences I'd have to say was probably the Templeton 4th of July parade for Independence Day.
That's where I first saw
I love that event, and it's just one of the funnest. And, growing up I was born in San Luis. I grew up down in South County. And just a different demographic coming up here in North County.
Yep.
I was a little kind of skeptical about the reaction we would have had.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it was a great one, and I love it.
Thanks for calling.
And you love your neighbors too, right, Nate?
My neighbors are awesome. Which neighbor is this?
This is Joy.
Joy, how are you?
Joy, do you have a question?
I just wanted to say that we're lucky enough to live right next door to Enrique and the horses, and we get to see a lot of neat things with them. So
yeah, that was
great neighbors.
Thanks for the call. I do have another question. You call her. So thanks for your call.
Bye bye.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question for Nate?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. Hey, this is Tom Harris, and I met Nate a while back. We've got the stagecoaches and that. I want to compliment you, sir. You've done very, very well explaining what it is that you and your family do. I'm proud to know you, and keep it up, because we're losing the traditions. And I've worked with Antonio Aguilar before.
Oh, man, that's my hero.
Before he passed away. But I commend you, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Mr. Harris, I appreciate you calling in. You just gave me goosebumps saying that you got to work with that great man. He is he's my favorite Mexican artist. I'm an old soul. I still play his music on a regular basis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Vicente Fernandez. And then also Ramon Becerra, I know you know him. He's in
Yes.
And then also Tomas Graciela, Charo Trick Roper.
Another good guy right there. And with Ramon, here's a quick little, we might have talked about this. So my dad's main horse, you met him, Barry, his name's Napoleon.
Mm-hmm.
He's about 22 years old. Mr. Harris, this horse, you wouldn't be able to tell the way that he behaves. He still dances his heart out at his age. We love him so much. We take care of him. He is sired by Ramon's stud down in San Ynez.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the calls, and thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, Nate, we got more calls with the horses than anything else I've ever done in the last 2.5 years. I just want to let everybody know, watch out for these guys at parades, weddings, and bar mitzvahs, okay? We will be back in about 2 minutes, and we'll be talking about young people taking to the trades.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. President-elect Trump says he will not rule out the use of military force to seize control of the Panama Canal and Greenland. He claims both are vital to American national security.
The Panama Canal is vital to our country. It's being operated by China.
Trump, speaking from his Mar-a-Lago estate in South Florida, the president of Panama contests the claim that China is controlling the canal. The so-called Laken Riley Act passes the House with bipartisan support.
Dozens of Democrats join with all House Republicans in supporting the bill named after the 22-year-old Georgia nursing student whose convicted killer was in the U.S. illegally. The bill would require ICE to detain illegal immigrants accused of burglary or theft.
Fox's Ryan Schmelz on Capitol Hill. The measure now goes to the Senate. America is listening to Fox News.
We're packed with mattresses.
If you've been into the mattress specialist at 13th and Riverside in Paso Robles, you'll see that the store is packed, stack after stack of mattresses, but the stacks are going away fast, so you better get down to the mattress specialist and take advantage of this huge sale.
And we're moving them out. We got to make room for new models that are going to be coming in this year.
Looking for a mattress? The mattress specialist at 13th and Riverside in Paso Robles says,
if we can't help you, nobody can.
We're back. Nate and I were sitting here talking about the wonderful calls and the horses, and I lost track of time. So welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Nate Santos of Ranchos Los Santos, and then also now he's going to be talking about his career in the trades, Santos Brothers Plumbing Company.
Yes, sir.
But start here. So, I've been noticing a whole lot of articles in the last year, which I shared with you, about you know, trades making a comeback, with, particularly with Gen Z people, you know, so people in their 20s and younger, you know, they're not going to college and they're taking up a trade. And, you know, you're kind of a pathfinder in that because, you know, you graduated from what, Atascadero High School?
Atascadero High School back in 09.
So, and so that's about 15 years ago, 14 years ago. Yeah, 11, 16 years ago, I guess. I did really good in math, didn't I? And so what did you think you wanted to go to college? Was that part of the path when you were in high school, or did you just say, no, I want to go to work?
You know what, Barry? I actually was not a big fan of school. I love learning. I love history, that kind of thing. The classroom setting was never for me. So any folks out there, you know, your kids or grandkids or siblings, you yourself, if you're listening, if you're in high school and you feel like that's not the right place for you, or maybe you feel out of place, or people give you a hard time, your family giving you a hard time, I'm the type of guy that I went to school, but I went for the breaks. I went for the lunches. You know, I would go to school, but not go to class, type of guy. To the day before graduation, my mom still got a call saying, hey, your son's not going to graduate. And my mom was flipping out, yelling at me, mijo, you got to get this. And I was like, Ma, don't worry, I'm going to graduate. I graduated. But I've always been a hard worker, hands-on kind of guy. My dad raised us to work hard, both my parents to be responsible, have a good work ethic. So everywhere I've worked at, I've always moved up in within the ranks. I used to work at the Atascadero KFC.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Don't go there yet.
Okay.
So when you were in high school, did they still have like shop classes?
You know what? They had an ag class, like for welding.
Okay.
And I didn't really get into that one.
Okay.
I should have, especially now. Looking back now, I was like, oh, I should have done a welding class. They didn't have a wood shop. I wanted to do a wood shop. They didn't have that. And then they had a car class. Mm-hmm. What do they call that? Mechanical ag or
okay.
Consumer auto, I think it was called.
Okay.
And I've never really been into cars, so that didn't call my attention.
And did you have jobs? Were you working?
Yeah, I worked throughout all of high school.
Yeah, what kind of jobs did you have?
So I worked at the Atascadero KFC.
Okay, that was your first job?
And then with my dad's music and him singing mariachi-style music, he would sing like at quinceañeras, weddings, bar mitzvahs, like you mentioned, some local community events. We also had like a DJ packet where we would provide the sound setup and I would DJ.
Okay.
We had a light show and that kind of a thing. And I did that all throughout high school as well.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after high school, I stayed with KFC for about a year after high school. And then I did door-to-door sales for a little bit.
What were you selling?
Back in the day, it was Charter. I think now it's Spectrum. Okay. Yeah, that was the toughest thing right there that I did. And then I worked at Home Depot. Worked at Home Depot for about 5 years. I was one of the youngest key carriers there, managers and trainings. I think I was 21 or 22 years old when I had the keys to the store. I was opening up at 4 a.m., closing down the store, doing security walks, setting the security code for the perimeter, that kind of a thing, writing schedules, interviewing people, hiring people type of thing. It was a really good experience. I worked in the plumbing department there, which was really good. My uncle, the person I learned the trade from was from my uncle. Big shout out to him. He's been a mentor for me and helped me with starting my own business and has really guided me and answered a lot of my questions. That's who I learned the trade from. His business is down in San Luis called Izzy Plumbing. And he tried getting me to work with him for years since before I graduated high school. And I was just like, nah, plumbing, service and repair, it's dirty, it's hard work. I don't want to do that.
Always on call.
The on call is the worst. And I happened to be in a pinch in my mid-20s, shortly after I had left Home Depot and I needed a job. And I hit him up and I was like, hey, uncle, I need this. This huge favor, can you just say that I'm your employee and that you pay me this much? I don't really need to work for you. And he's like, no. If I do you this favor, you do me a favor. I've been telling you for years to come work with me. We talked about it. I was all right. I'll give it a chance, maybe a year or two. And I picked it up pretty quick.
What was it about plumbing that you liked?
Helping people out solve their problems. Mm-hmm. It feels good when someone has an issue in their house. You know, they can't get hot water. Their drains aren't draining, you know, they have to shut their water off so they can't take a shower, what have you. And when they call you, you go out there, you take a look at it, and we diagnose it and say, hey, you know what, this is what's going on. We can do this for you. And then being happy to be able to take a hot shower at night, wash your dishes, or, you know, be able to flush a toilet. Everybody wants to be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So before we get into, because I want you to share what you've done to build your own business, because I think it's instructive. But I'm looking at the Mike Rowe Dirty Jobs Guy's website here, his foundation, and I'm just amazed here, you know, I mean, at the amount of money that the tradespeople are earning today.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm looking at Orange County. There's a heavy equipment diesel technician, you know, $100,000 a year. There's all kinds of jobs here that are $40, $50 an hour jobs for people. So, again, if we do have any young people who are listening and they're like, or if you've got kids or grandkids that, you know, they're just not taking their, you know, going to college, or you don't want them to go to college.
I mean, what's the stat now on how the how many kids are going or young adults are going off to college, coming out? What is it? $36,000 in debt.
Easy.
And then what are they majoring in? You know, it's going to be some BS, with all due respect.
Yes.
Nonsense degree that there's not even a demand for.
Yep.
So they're coming out in debt with a nonsense degree that doesn't get them any work.
Well, and again, and it's good. And again, you know, we're members of the BNI, and I know you're going to mention that here in a minute. But, you know, I mean, you know, when you look at Kalen and you look at Jay,
young guys,
I mean, young guys like you, but younger than you actually.
Yeah, Jay, I think is about 4 years younger than me. Yeah, 4 or 5 years younger than me. Yeah,
and again, they're not doing blue collar work necessarily, but they're still. It's a trade that they're in.
They're involved. Yeah. Well, with Jay, he's not necessarily hands-on, the blue collar, but it is he's representing a physical working company.
Right. And Kalen does all the tech stuff.
All the tech stuff,
phone systems and that kind of thing. All right, so tell us about the journey of setting up your own business and what how you figured it all out.
Well, I wouldn't say I got it all figured out, but I'm working on it. So it started off back in shortly after the Home Depot days. I just always loved animals. I loved horses. I loved working with my dad and his music. And I thought to myself, what can I do to help my dad out? Offer this show of him performing and singing with these dancing horses. We need to get this information out there. So I came across on the back of the Paso magazine. And they have this in the back of it. That's where I learned about BNI, Business Networking International, Toastmasters, Chamber of Commerce, the Wine
Alliance,
mm-hmm. all these different networking ones, HBA, Hispanic Business Association. And so I just started going to all these different events to network. Mm-hmm. And I just started offering the services. Hey, my dad sings. And, you know, oh, I've seen your dad at the fair. Oh, I saw your dad over here.
So this was
here.
Promoting the horses.
The horses.
Yeah.
So that was right before, that was like right around 2018.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got an LLC for the horses, started doing some shows at some wineries, some vineyards, some branches, just some photo shoots for some weddings, quinceañeras, gave some lessons on for some bride and grooms to ride in on horseback. Everything was going good. 2020's rolling right around the corner. Already have a few contracts set up and everything locks down. You can't party, social distancing, all that crazy nonsense that everyone remembers about happened. And I was bummed out. And I had already been doing the plumbing for a couple of years. People weren't traveling. People were staying at home. So they started tackling their projects around the house. And social media, I had shared on social media, I think it was Snapchat or Instagram, Facebook, all of them, you know, different little projects that my brother and I would do with plumbing, working for my uncle's company. And people just started reaching out. I was like, hey, I have this plumbing issue. I got this plumbing project. And I kid you not, out of this little blue four-door Toyota Corolla, we repiped a couple different houses. Did multiple full-on bathroom remodels, demoed, ran new water lines, drain lines.
Other than the hands-on training that you got from your uncle, did you do other kinds of training?
Yeah, so I've been big into listening to podcasts and information, YouTube University for many years now. I'd say since my early 20s, listening to different podcasts. One of the biggest ones everyone knows right now is the Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah.
That one's huge. I like listening to that one and just the different guests he would have on, from the different fighters to the different topics, scientists, archaeologists, nutritionists, all these different topics. That was just joyful for me. I just enjoyed it. Some friends thought I was weird. Like, what are you listening to? Talk show? That's so boring. I was like, man, I'm like learning. This is like a cool conversation these guys are having and I'm learning about it. I liked it. And then light bulb started going off. And he learned about business. So I started looking up, you know, business podcasts. There's one that I learned some things from called the Charro Azteca podcast. Hmm. This gentleman has an e-commerce business online selling Mexican clothing.
Hmm.
And he became, you know, pretty successful when he was talking about how he went about it. Started reading some books, you know, some of the ones, more popular ones, Think and Grow Rich, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Science of Getting Rich, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's, you know, some of the good ones out there that are known. And then just networking.
Mm-hmm.
I got into that. And so listening to different business podcasts is what's led me to help me structure my business and the operations of it.
So you basically just got a whole, you gathered a whole lot of general information from multiple sources.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of applied bits and pieces of it to whatever you were trying to do.
Yep, pretty much.
That's very cool. That's very cool.
It's the age of information, man.
Yeah, no kidding. So I'm sure many of our listeners have seen your truck around town. Yeah. It's a great story about your truck. Tell us about how you got the idea. And talk about marketing. I mean, so tell us a little bit about the truck.
Yeah, so
After you graduated from your Toyota.
Yeah, so after we graduated from the Toyota, we were able to scale up a little bit, and we got a pickup truck, and we're able to carry more tools with us, more materials. Finally, we're able to get our hands on a utility box truck, and we had this design. And it's funny, I thought about the design of the truck about 2 years before we got the truck. I had it in my head. Now, based on our first conversation that we had about the horses, and I keep bringing them up, as much as I love plumbing and plumbing provides for me and my family, and thanks to the plumbing, I'm able to do what I do. I love the horses and spending time with them and so much more.
Mm-hmm.
So with this truck, I really, really wanted to embrace who I am. And so I told the designer, I was like, hey, I want, you know, two little cartoon characters, my brother and I, and I want us to be wearing our overalls, which you see me wearing here. It's mm-hmm. my uniform. Overalls are a plumber's uniform as well as an ag, you know, uniform. You see a lot of farmers wearing overalls. I like the flannel shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to wear cowboy boots because they're also work boots. And then I want my character to have a cowboy hat since I'm a cowboy and I ride my horse. Mm-hmm. And I want you to put little spurs on the cartoon characters because I just, you know, and it has happened before. I'll be horseback riding and I'll get a call and I'll hop off my horse and go to work.
Yep.
And so I did that, and then I told him I was kind of debating on how, what to do the background.
So you found an artist in Santa Maria, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so and tell the story about that. Was a whole other ordeal for you too, wasn't it?
A little bit. He's a cool guy, a gentleman by the name of Ricardo, and he's funny. He's a real creative guy. I kind of got a little bit of hippie vibes from him, mm-hmm. from his past. And it took a while. Like I gave him the idea. He took some pictures of myself and my brother. He drew our characters. And then took a real long time, I think, to get the background done. And if you look at our first truck, you can see some of the clouds that kind of look like dragons. That's what kind of led me to like, well, what is he on to be thinking of clouds shaped like dragons? And so I had to tell him to kind of dial back some of the details. I want the focus to be plumbing. I had to tell him. And thankfully, that truck is colorful. It's very unique. People have called it a food truck, taco truck, ice cream truck. Anything but a plumbing truck is what I get all the time. But we got a lot of kudos and positive feedback for it. It's a giant billboard. Mm-hmm. We've gotten calls just from people looking at the truck.
Yeah, I'll bet you have. So we got a break coming up here in a few minutes, but and I do want to get into common plumbing problems, you know, in that segment real quickly. But you know, I mean, what is probably the most interesting or complex job, plumbing job that you've done in your, you know, career?
Oh, man. There's so many different ones. There's a lot of commonalities, and then there's a lot of oddball ones where there's some tools that we'll use on just rare occasions, and there's tools that we'll use on the daily. Here's a cool one. It's something called pipe bursting.
Pipe bursting.
Yeah. Okay. So this is really cool technology where you run a steel cable through the existing sewer lateral, and that your sewer lateral is the drain pipe of the sewer waste removal system from your house, where your bathtub, your laundry, your sinks, your toilets all meet up to one common pipe, and then that common pipe feeds and drains that sewer waste down to the city sewer
or into a septic tank.
we're going to talk about city sewer.
Okay.
A septic tank would be a different situation.
Okay.
So this sewer lateral from that point of the house to the city sewer on certain neighborhoods that are older, you know, 50 plus years old, there's going to be old clay pipe, Orangeburg pipe, cast iron pipe, pipes that's fallen apart and it needs to get replaced. Before this technology, there was an open trench dug up to remove that old pipe and run a new pipe. Hmm. With this technology, there's a steel cable that runs through the existing pipe as long as it is in fair enough condition. You know, it's on its brink of its last end, but it's in fair enough condition to run the steel cable through. There's a pothole down at the street where the sewer connects to the city drain, city sewer, and then there's another pothole up front nearest to the house. And this hydraulic machine gets put into one of those potholes, and it pulls that cable, and that cable has attached a solid piece polyethylene pipe that's been fused together for the length of the sewer lateral that's being replaced. And this cable's dragging this new pipe, breaking apart the old pipe out of the way, laying the new pipe in its place.
So it's basically whoever came up with something like that.
It's a genius. It to me is like fascinating. When I first got into plumbing work with my uncle and we did one of those jobs and he was explaining to me what we're going to do, I personally couldn't wrap my mind around it. I don't know if I've done a good enough job of explaining what is happening, but that's pretty much what he told me. And I just couldn't. I was like, what? How is that possible? He's like, dude, wait and you'll see. And it is super cool.
What happens to all the stuff, the broken pipe that...
It stays down there, underground.
Just stays down there, huh?
Yeah, it's out of sight, out of mind. You got new pipe in its place.
And is the new pipe, is it just a little bit smaller than the original?
No, it's bigger than the cast iron. It's probably around the same size as an ABS, smaller.
What's an ABS?
ABS is like your more common, newer age plastic, black plastic.
Hmm.
I forget the abbreviation of what ABS stands for.
Okay.
Drain pipe. It's a little bit bigger than PVC pipe. It's smaller than the Orangeburg pipe. Here's a really cool, fun plumbing fact. Orangeburg in the city of Orangeburg, Pennsylvania, during World War II, when all the metals being used for tanks and, you know, heavy artillery and all that kind of stuff, people were like, no, we're not going to waste our metal on sewer pipe. We need that for our tanks. All the metal has to go for more important things than sewer pipe. So they came up with rolled roofing tar paper in the shape of a pipe.
Wow. That's how interesting.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's go into some of the, because I'm sure we're going to get cut off here in a second, but tell us a little bit about what are the common things that you're seeing right now that, you know, people are getting fixed? The common problems that people don't even think about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I'll give you one. I mean, we've talked about it because I have to have you up to take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I put a tankless water heater in my barn.
Right.
For the bathroom in the barn. And nobody ever told me it had to be serviced. Tell me about that.
That is a common thing. We actually come across it quite a bit where, you know, folks are having issues with their tankless. And for those of you that don't know what a tankless water heater is, it's a newer water heater. It's hot water on demand. Essentially, the hot water is being heated up as it's being fed through the machine and as you're demanding it at whatever fixture that you're requesting it to be hot. And instead of boiling your water day and night to maintain temperature in a traditional 40 or 50 gallon tank, it only heats it as you're requesting.
Kind of flash heats it.
Yes, it's a nicer, newer, it's a little bit more expensive appliance, but you save money on your energy bill. That's the whole idea with it. But they're really nice appliances. However, they have to be serviced on an annual basis. Some folks, if it's a smaller house or it's not as much demand on it, a smaller family, let's say a family of two versus a family of four or five, every other year you can service it. But you want to get it serviced on an annual basis.
Yeah, so we need to talk.
Yeah.
But I mean, now they're trying to phase out traditional water heaters, right?
The government. I just saw someone post something about some natural gas thing they're trying to get rid of.
All right, folks, when we come back in a few minutes, we're going to talk about some other common plumbing issues that you might want to take a look at for yourself. So stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks selling off and treasury yields spiking as investors wait a batch of upbeat economic data that raised concerns that an inflation rebound could slow the pace of monetary policy easing from the Fed. Stocks giving up earlier gains after a Labor Department report showed that job openings unexpectedly increased in November, while a separate report said services sector activity accelerated in December. Getty Images stock jumping 24% after agreeing to a merger of equals with Shutterstock with an enterprise value of about $3.7 billion. Shares of Shutterstock rose 15%. The Dow winners, Amgen, Johnson & Johnson, and J.P. Morgan Chase. The Dow decliners, Nvidia, Salesforce, and Home Depot. The Dow falling 178 points. The Nasdaq lower by 375. S&P 500 down 66. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Trust & Will knows that we'll all eventually need a will. How about right now? Trust & Will makes creating your will easy, like while you're lounging on the couch easy. Trust & Will is designed by attorneys but customized by you, and all documents are state-specific and secure. Find your plan at TrustAndWill.com and use offer code RADIO now for 10% off. That's TrustAndWill.com, offer code RADIO. Trust & Will is an online estate planning service. Visit TrustAndWill.com for details.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Wesley here from Stove and Spa Center. I just wanted to thank you for letting us make your life more comfortable for 35 years. You can see and explore all of our hearth products, wood, gas, pellet, and electric, to keep you warm and cozy during cold and wet winters. Or maybe you're looking to enjoy the benefits of what hot tub's soothing water can do for your body and to melt away the stress that living today brings on. Or perhaps you want to get in better shape this year by exercising in one of our swim spas. There are many models and sizes. We even have models with treadmills built into them. We have a large showroom with lots of the products we sell. Plus, lead times to get products have been greatly reduced. And of course, you can still get all the supplies and even get your water tested for your pool and spa. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Come check us out at Stove and Spa Center, 7485 El Camino Real, Atascadero, between Curberel and Moyle Roads. All products we offer are on our website at stoveandspa.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Nate Santos, Ranchos Los Santos Dancing Horses, and Santos Brothers Plumbing. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show, I'm bringing back Stephen Moses, who is the president of the Center for Long-Term Care Reform. And this is a really important topic because, unfortunately, as those of us, we're aging, and more of us need long-term care services. The problem is that our provider system is not adequate for the number of people who are going to need care. And he's got some really great insights. And I also, he's been involved in government and politics for, God, 50 years. And so he has real insights into the Medicare system, the Social Security system, and all those various different things. So I think it'll be a worthwhile show for you to tune into. And then we have coming back Jake Frederick, who is with a company called BBSI. He's a HR consultant, but BBSI is what's called a professional employer organization. And this is for companies with five or more employees that really want to focus on their business and not have to be employers, so to speak. They don't have to manage their employees. They don't have to manage their employees so much as when it comes to workers' comp or health insurance and that type of stuff, and all the regulations that they're getting buried with. So really, again, if you're a small business owner, small to medium-sized business owner, this is something you're going to want to tune into. It'll be a good topic. We're going to talk about all the new labor laws that have been imposed upon employers in California. I don't know about you, Nate. I mean, I used to love my employees. They were great people, but I hated being dealing with all
the legalities of everything.
Yeah. And it's much worse now than it was.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, it is crazy. So anyway, so in the time we have left, let's talk about a few common plumbing problems that you're seeing today. You think it's really important whether you have you tie into the city sewers or you have a septic tank. That really has to be checked on a pretty regular basis, right?
Yeah, so here's a fun fact for any folks out there that are on septic tank. In theory, you should never have to empty out your septic tank.
Really?
What happens is, and especially since all the crazy nonsense stuff that we went through a few years back during the lockdowns and all that time, is people got real big into disinfecting, sanitizing, all that stuff, which we should. We should be, you know, clean, sanitate everything so that we don't have germs spreading and all that stuff. What happens if you're on a septic system, you know, you're sanitizing your toilet, bathtub, scrubbing everything down, and if you're flushing all that stuff down your sewer system, and it ends up inside your septic tank. So all that disinfectant, Clorox kills what? 99.9% of bacteria and viruses. So it kills all the bacteria in your tank.
That you need.
Yes, that you need. So all the bacteria that you need inside your tank, which eats away at all the solids and all the buildup in your tank, is now dying. So instead of being eaten away and maintaining itself down low, it builds up, it builds up. Now you have a full tank full of stuff. And you need it pumped out. And most folks are getting them pumped out like average around like 5 years. Just mm-hmm. depends on usage and the size of the family and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I know mine. I mean, I put something in the tank every month.
Ridex.
Something else. Something that's similar, I guess.
Similar. Idea.
And, you know, to keep, I call it the stew.
Yeah.
Stewing.
Keep the stew stewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it does have to, you have to every 4 or 5 years, you really need to get it done.
So. Yeah. So, like, what I've recommended some folks to do is, like, when they're disinfecting their, it's easier to do, like, on a bathtub or your kitchen sink or lavatory or what have you, is you put that drain plug, disinfect, rinse off, and when you got that little puddle of juice, you know, mop it up, throw it in the trash so it doesn't go down the drain. A little bit will go down there. It's stuff to do with that with your toilet. So after doing those sort of things, add some of that, whatever solution there is. There's Ridex. There's a bunch of eco-friendly different solutions out there.
Yeah.
And that's going to help mitigate your tank from building up sooner rather than later. And you want it to be later than sooner.
Well, and I know with mine, some of the ground under the line settled.
Yes.
So I lost some of my drop.
Yes.
So that's something that you need. And I, you know, I didn't use you for this, but you know who my plumber is.
Yeah, he's big great, shout out great to Richard guy. Out
Richard,
there.
Richard's yeah. great, but
yeah, he's a good guy.
But he had this machine that went in there, and you know,
he's
showing
the camera?
Me this camera and everything like that. And it's like, yeah, like I don't really want to look at this, Richard.
It's a colonoscopy of your house.
No kidding. Thankfully, everything was okay, but you know, but we could see that the line had settled.
So you know what? That actually happened a lot. So this year we haven't really had much rain, but last year we had a pretty good amount, and the year before we had a bunch of rain. So when you don't have rain for such a long time and then a bunch of rain hits, you get mudslides, landslides, ground shifting, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of dislodged drain pipes that needed to get redropped in the right pitch.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. We're talking about protecting your plumbing. What can we help you with?
I have a question about water heaters.
Yes, sir. How can we help you?
It says to drain them. You know, it has a little faucet on the bottom of the water heater. It says to drain them like once a year or so.
Yes, sir.
Does that really, you know, I've done it before, and I really don't seem to see any sediment come out or anything. And I find it, I've done it where I've drained it and don't see anything, and I've done it where I don't drain it for 10 years, and the water heater still goes out about the same time. What's your thoughts on that?
You know what? That's a great question. Richard, Nate, what's your email address?
That's n@nate.santosbrosplumbing@gmail.com.
Did you get that? If you didn't get that, send me an email. I'll get you Nate's number, and he'll get back to you on that question. Nate, thank you so much for being here. Thank you. Thanks for the call. We came up against the hard break. So
okay.
Have a great rest of the week, and thank you all for tuning in today. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.